I have a couple of weird stories for you tonight. Something strange happened to me after case number 4. I'm not sure it has to do with the hole. I'm sure it has to do with anything. But the first time was shortly after leaving Seattle, fleeing from the darkness lurking in the basement of that apartment building. I was on I-90 around sunset, going 70 through the central Washington desert, when I happened to glance in my rearview mirror. And there was a goddamn guy sitting at the little table in the RV's kitchenette. I swerved in shock, then righted myself and yelled something like, "What the fuck? Who the fuck are you?" No response. When I glanced back in the mirror, he was still there, motionless, completely ensconced in shadows. I just saw his form, tall, thin, and he seemed to be wearing a wide-brim hat, maybe a fedora. He was sitting at my table. Looked to me like he was facing the back window, gazing out. Solid, real, not a hallucination or mirage. I yelled at him again. Then I quickly pulled over and put on my hazards. But by the time I undid my seatbelt, stood and turned around, he was gone. I thoroughly checked the RV, nada. No plausible way for him to hide or escape, he was just gone. I decided maybe he wasn't a person. Actually, he looked a lot like one of those shadow people you hear about. All black, like a walking silhouette, but a three-dimensional one. And I don't know how common this is, but this one seemed to have a few more real-life details. There was the suggestion of color in his skin, and the clothes when he shifted. Very corporeal. Just looked like a human dude was sitting behind me in the dark. But that clearly wasn't the case. I doubted he was a ghost, but you never know. I brushed it off as maybe an overactive imagination, still spooked by my encounter with the hole. I didn't think that he would appear again. That was wrong. A few months went by. I continued interviewing people with stories to tell. Most of them were run-of-the-mill haunted houses and UFO sightings. The kind of shit that gives you a few goosebumps, but nothing I hadn't heard of before. Nothing like the hole. I traveled, constantly ghosting in and out of people's lives. I was never lonely. I met new people almost every day. But nothing ever got complicated. I preferred it that way. Early that spring, I was contacted by a woman in a small town in Louisiana who said that she had a story for me. Like nothing you ever heard. She also said that she had proof that she hadn't dreamt it. She wouldn't say much more. Intrigued, I headed south to see what I could find. Case number 9, the handprints. Location, St. Martinsville, Louisiana. Date, March 31st, 2017. Witness name, Lydia T. Relationship to case, family. St. Martinville is a small, picturesque town in southern Louisiana, about 60 miles southwest of Baton Rouge. I am told by my host, Miss Lydia, that we are in the heart of Cajun country. It's gorgeous here. Green bayous and lush forests, and holy shit, the food's good. Lydia is a sweet, bubbly woman in her 50s with an energetic air. She greets me at her home, an old, two-story plantation-style house, and ushers me inside as soon as I arrive. I'm surprised by how welcoming she is. People get a little wary about meeting strangers, but she says she saw right away that I'm a good guy. I start recording immediately. There's something about this house. Something that feels promising. Lydia shares the home with her husband and his 98-year-old grandmother, Mama Daphne. Her husband is away on business, but I met Daphne as Lydia leads me to the kitchen for iced tea. We pass through the parlor, which is darker than the rest of the house. Heavy brocade curtains are drawn over the windows. Lydia, talking and gesticulating, doesn't even pause to point out the frail old lady sitting in the rocker by the corner. I almost passed her without noticing her. I would have, actually, had she not shifted a little and set the chair rocking. For a second, out of the corner of my eye in the dark room, I think it's a shadow figure in that chair. God, holy! God. Huh. Sorry, ma'am.
That's Mama. She don't talk much. Mama! Why don't you get yourself some light in here? You scare the poor child half to death, you. Mesla, I tell you. Sensitive eyes, she says.
No. It's okay, my bad. Nice to meet you, Mama. Mama raises a withered arm and gestures vaguely at me. Opens her mouth, she croaks something I can't make out. A slurred mix of French and English. Her eyes are squinted, glaring. Her mouth turned down in a scowl. She looks pissed.
Oh, boy. She likes you, I think.
What'd she say?
Haven't the slightest to me. Come on, let's get us to the kitchen.
We leave the dark parlor. Mama snarls something as we leave, her voice rising into a screech. Lydia ignores it. I follow her lead.
Old crot. It's nicer in here, yeah?
She your mom?
Bon Dieu, no. My husband's. Lived here 4 years now. Getting meaner and weirder by the day. Not that she was ever sweet, sweet to start with, no. But you gotta be there for family.
Sure.
Ah, well. Have some tea, cher. Food, too. Mange. Me? I got a story to tell. You ready?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, this happened last winter, bit before Christmas. My husband, he was going out of state on business, so it was just me and Mama here. She wasn't so out of her head then, no. Bit more lucid. And she was looking forward to the big fast to do with family. So she was in a pretty good mood that week, huh? We passed us a good time, getting the house ready for guests. Well, the night before the cousins are supposed to be here, we get a knock at the door. Mama answers it. And out there in the dark is our neighbor, Miss Lola Savoy, who lives just up the hill back there.
Lydia points to the kitchen window, toward the thick green expanse of trees beyond their backyard.
Well, you wouldn't know, Cher, but Miss Lola is no bit of good news around here. The kids call her a witch. They're all scared of her to death. Won't go near her place. Me? I think she's just a poor old lady. Likes to keep to herself. Hey, when I saw her at the door, I caught a frisson, you know. Miss Lola is too old to be walking alone at night through them woods, and anyway, why would she? Did she need help? I tried to ask me, but as soon as Mama saw her, she cursed at Miss Lola there, and she just slammed the door in her face. I heard Miss Lola curse her right on back, through the door, and she kept on knocking, but Mama refused to let her in. Wouldn't let me near the door neither. Miss Lola stayed out there a while. Then she left. I still don't know what she come here for. Well, I ask Mama about it. And Mama tells me she hates old Miss Lola. And they have hated each other since they was kids. Something about an old beau of Mama's who Miss Lola stole from her. She won't do nothing for that lady to this day. Won't even talk to her. Me? I'm worried Miss Lola might be hurt or sick. Why else would she come down here? Miss, when I finally get past Mama, Miss Lola's already gone into the night. Mama, she falls asleep early, just as peaceful as you please. I go upstairs to lay down too. And I can't sleep at all, no. I just keep fretting on about Miss Lola and hope she's okay. I guess I did doze off after a while, though, because the next thing I remember is I opened my eyes and how dark it is. I lay there for a second, wondering what could have woke me, and I listen, and then I hear a sound, and I say, "What is that now?" And there it is again. I hear it. It's something going thump, thump, thump. Thump. It ain't outside, no. It sounds like it's somewhere off in the house. And me, I think, now that's a strange thing to hear. And then I hear it again. Thump, 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 thump. And I can tell now. It's coming from upstairs. Up in the attic, but on the other end of the house. And well, Cher, sounds like someone's running around up there. Back and forth across the floor. Thump, 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 thump. And that really scares me. My husband's gone away that week, remember? And I'm all alone here with Mama. She can barely climb the stairs. She couldn't never reach the attic door to get up there. I hope it's just a raccoon or something, or a possum. But this sounds bigger than that. Sounds like a kid is racing around up there. Thump, 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 thump. Well, I don't know what possessed me. But I decided I needed to take a look. So I got a flashlight. I went out in the hall. The attic door wasn't pulled down then, which was a comfort. And so I went up there. And you know what? I didn't find nothing. It was just empty. No animals. No people. No footprints in the dust. I wondered if maybe acorns were falling down on my roof and giving me a scare. Decided that must be it. So I went back to bed. I started to doze off. And just as I really start to fall asleep, I hear it again. Thump, 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 thump. And it sounded closer. Like someone was running around. Right above me. Right above me. Up in the attic. But that area... My bedroom is right near the side of the house. And I know well as anyone that where the roof comes down and meets the attic floor, it's too low for someone to be walking around up there. And that, I tell you, that gives me the heebie-jeebies. But I can still hear it. Thump, 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 thump. And it pauses. And thump, 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 thump. And I say to myself, what is that? And it comes to the area of the attic that's right above my bed. Right above me. Thump, 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 thump. And I finally get too scared. I grab my flashlight and I turn it on, just so I have some light, and I... Alonso, Cher, maybe you should see for yourself, so you believe me.
She leads me out of the kitchen and upstairs on a long hallway. Assuming we're headed to the end, where a trap door to the attic is cut into the ceiling. I beeline for it, but Lid just stops me halfway there, and opens a door into the master bedroom.
This is where I was.
Okay.
I turn on my flashlight, and I look up at the ceiling.
What the fuck?
Up there, crawling around on her hands and knees, up on the ceiling like a giant insect, there's an old lady in a dirty nightgown.
I study the ceiling as she speaks. There are handprints up there, dozens of them, crisscrossing every which way, dark black stains, and you can clearly make out fingers and prints of the palms. I turn to Lydia, confused. Crawling on the ceiling?
Sure enough. Made those noises I was hearing when she used her two hands and two knees to move around. Thump, 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 thump. She was fast, too. Sounded like running, sort of skittering around. It took me a lot of staring to realize. It was Mama. But something had happened to her. Something bad. She was crawling around there, and she was giggling all crazy. Her hair was flying everywhere. She looked like she was the witch. She stopped moving when I put the light on her and covered her face and screeched at me. I didn't know what to do with me. I just stared. I couldn't even scream. When I finally found my voice, I said, Mon Dieu, and Cher. I know you're not Cajun, but that means...
My God. Yeah, I know.
You have your faith, Blake?
No, ma'am. Not much.
That's sad news, Cher. Really. Maybe someday you'll find it. Me? I have mine since I was just a pishwank. So when I said the name of God, I meant it. And it had power behind it. Mama screamed when she heard it. Like, and she fell down off the ceiling. She landed on the bed, thank Jesus. Didn't break nothing. Her hands were filthy with something. That's how come she left all those handprints up there. I found a weird old bag on the kitchen table next morning. Maybe a hex bag, some kind of kunja. Mama had ripped into it. Think she was trying to destroy it. But it was full of ashes or dirt. Maybe that was what got all over her hands. Well, Mama never recovered from it, whatever it was. You saw her today, yeah? The light blinds her. She can't speak so well no more. She's always so angry. It was like she had a stroke or something. That's what the doctors say. Me? I think she was witched. I think old Miss Lola made a gris-gris on her when she didn't let her in that night. And maybe when Mama found that hex bag and destroyed it, maybe she made it worse on her own self.
Can we talk to Lola? Get her insights?
I'd love to, Cher. I really would. The next morning, I went out to do just that. I followed the trail up into the woods towards a house. But I only got to the top of that first hill. And I found her body there.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh. Miss Lola was lying face down in the middle of the trail. Looked like she'd been there all night. She met her demise out in the dark and the cold. I think she really was asking for help from us. Such a cruel thing for Mama to do, throwing her out like that.
It's hard to blame her for making the gris-gris.
Oh, it sure is, yeah. And it's hard to blame Mama for throwing out a witch. But I could have talked to them. Could have had forgiveness. Some compassion. And they didn't. Neither of them. Me? I think we get what's coming to us. Maybe that night, both of those old ladies, with so much hate in their shriveled little hearts. Maybe they got exactly that.
Now, admittedly, I left that one skeptical. Lydia seemed like a nice lady, but the handprints on the ceiling weren't exactly the proof that she promised. She could have used a tool to put them there herself, though granted that would have taken a lot of effort. Mama was a mean old thing, sure, but lots of old ladies were like that. This very well could be a hoax. That night, Lydia's family let me park the RV on their land and sleep there. As I lay in the dark, in silence drifting off, I heard something from beyond the curtains, between the bed and the kitchenette. It was a footstep, someone treading on the creaky bit of floor, right next to the sink. With a lurch, I thought of Mama, her withered old limbs taking her back and forth across the ceiling. But I immediately disregarded that. The atmosphere in here was completely different from that house. And then I heard the creak of a cabinet door opening in the kitchen, and the distinct sound of someone taking a glass or bowl from it. I sat up completely alert, and more than pissed. Who the hell was in my RV? I climbed off the bed, grabbed the baseball bat I kept next to it in case of this very occurrence. I'm a big guy. I know I could swing that thing with heavy force. Palming it, I quietly slid back the curtain and peered into the rest of the RV. An empty room. Blue moonlight streamed through the windows, illuminating the table, kitchenette, and further up the driver and passenger seats, but no interloper. I quickly checked the tiny bathroom and the storage space, opened up the door to peer out into the darkness. Nothing moved. The door had been locked. It's not exactly easy to hide in an RV, so I was satisfied only after a couple of minutes that no one else was in there. I rubbed my face and I told myself I was being an idiot. You submerge yourself in the weird and haunted for months. Of course, you're going to hear some bumps in the night. Sighing, I headed back to bed. But as I passed the kitchen, I noticed that a cabinet door was wide open, and a plastic glass sat on the counter next to the sink. I was fairly sure that hadn't been me, but I might have simply forgotten. Oh shit, though. My RV turned out to be haunted. I was officially the unluckiest guy in existence. There's no more sign of a ghost, though. Not for a few months, anyway. Case number 12, The Shape in the Lake. Location, Sandpoint, Idaho. Date, July 24th, 2017. Witness name, Kendall and Dan H. Relationship to case, they're the owners of the lake cabin. This one came in from good old Facebook. Kendall and Dan are family friends. And Kendall got in touch after they had dinner with my dad. I'm not very close with my parents, but after the 3-year infected town debacle, my dad made a conscious effort not to let me disappear from his life again, which I guess is a nice sentiment. We talk on the phone occasionally. Anyway, he told Kendall and Dan what I was doing, and made it out to be some kind of journalism project. The next day, Kendall messaged me. I drove up to their vacation home to see what it was all about. Lake Pend Oriel. It's the largest body of water in Idaho, and the fifth deepest lake in the nation. Surrounded by lush forests, it offers beauty and recreation of all kinds. Obviously, this has made it into a bit of destination for rich retirees. I hear Viggo Mortensen has a cabin up here. Kendall and Dan fit in perfectly. They're only in their 50s, but they've got the kind of setup that you could dream about. Dan's a pediatrician, planning on early retirement up here, and his wife Kendall works as a therapist in a city a few hours away. They own a quaint little cottage, right on the water surrounded by trees. It's a quiet part of the lake, a few miles from the nearby tourist town and relatively secluded from neighbors. Really pretty, really peaceful. I'm welcomed into their airy and richly furnished lake home with hugs and a glass of whiskey. After a little chatting up, they've known me since I was a kid. Dan wants to know if I'll smoke a cigar with him. I follow him upstairs to a wide balcony that looks out onto a picture-perfect view of the lake. The shoreline's only about 30 yards from the house. Kendall joins us, and we sit and drink and reminisce for a few hours, basking in the warmth of early summer. When the sun begins to set behind the distant mountains, however, suddenly Dan wants to go inside. I'm lounging with my feet propped up, picking at the cheese plate between me and very reluctant to move. Kendall shushes her husband, tells him that this is the perfect place to tell the story that I'm here for. Anyway, the sun sets too pretty. Grumbling, Dan sits back down and pours himself another drink. I settle back in my chair and start recording.
He's still a little skeeved out about all this. It happened last summer, and for a while there, I was afraid he'd make us move. But we've poured our hearts into this place, really fixed it up. You should have seen it before we got a hold of it, Blake. It was owned by a recluse, totally run down. The kitchen was... I can't. The land was totally overgrown, but we've made it our own.
Expensive overhaul, too.
Right. Danny never walks away from equity. Anyway, we stayed, but he still doesn't like going outside at night. We used to do night swims a lot.
Skinny dipping.
Danny! Well, anyway, we don't do that anymore.
It's a real bummer, but yeah, I won't. She won't either, despite the brave face.
What happened?
Well, it was last year. Last summer. The kids had come up for the weekend. You remember Joe and Izzy, don't you?
Of course. How are they doing? We chat about their kids for a bit, both of whom are only a few years younger than me.
Get back to the story, Ken.
God, he is so bossy. Okay, so Joe and Izzy came up and we were having a nice day swimming, relaxing. About mid-afternoon, Izzy spotted something floating out in the lake. Middle of the lake. Way out over there.
Kendall gestures to the expanse of water between the trees. The lake is pretty wide in this area. The trees on the opposite shore are vague green shapes. There's nothing but water to the east and west.
So we looked, and there was something black floating out there. At first we thought it was a seagull.
Too big to be a seagull.
Well, so I thought it could be a log or something. No big deal. Happens a lot. But time went by, and the shape didn't move.
If it was a log, it'd get swept away by the waves. It was pretty windy out.
Exactly. But it stayed in the same general area all day.
We kept trying to figure out what it was, squinting at it, but it was just too far away to make out any details. We worried for a while that maybe it was a swimmer, someone got stuck out there or something. It looked like it could be someone's head, someone with dark hair.
But it couldn't be a person, though. I mean, that thing was out there for hours. No one could do that. They'd get too tired.
I thought it was a buoy or something. Someone anchored something out there, right in front of our cabin. Kinda pissed me off.
Oh, it did kind of look like a buoy.
Yeah, it wasn't moving around either. You'd think a person would be waving their arms bobbing around, but if this was a swimmer, he was really still. Just hunkered down in the middle of the lake with only his head above the surface for hours. Did it make sense though for a second? Could that guy be standing out on the lake floor out there? Maybe he wasn't treading water at all, but that wasn't possible either. It's like 20 feet deep out there.
Didn't Joe make some awful joke about a body being chained to a cinder block and floating to the surface?
Kinda bad taste.
Well, we figured it was a buoy. Thought we'd take the boat out the next day to go get it, no big deal.
Izzy got weird about it, though.
She did, didn't she? It really freaked her out. She kept saying, I don't know, that thing is weird.
Girl had a point.
Yeah. It freaked all of us out, actually. There was something uncanny about the way it was floating there. None of us wanted to swim out and see what it was. I don't think any of us got in the water again after Izzy pointed it out the first time.
I did. I wanted to float, but I felt too weird about it. Didn't stay in for long.
I got worried it could be some kind of big animal. Lots of possibilities.
Joe freaked out too. Tell him about that.
Right, so usually Joe is really stoic, man a few words. He was just shrugging off Izzy's hysterics the whole afternoon.
He still didn't get in the water, though.
Anyway, after dinner, Joe went out for a smoke, and he came running back all wild-eyed. He said that the shape had moved while we were inside.
See? I said no problem. It was just some driftwood, and Joe was completely white. He said, no, it's closer to our shore.
We all went up to the balcony and looked out. It had definitely moved closer to us. We still couldn't figure out what it was, though. None of us even wanted to go back down to the dock. It was totally spooky, made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. We wanted to stay as far away from it as we could.
The kids were pretty eager to get out there.
Yeah, they left shortly after dinner. Danny and I just holed up inside and forgot about it.
I didn't forget. I unlocked the gun safe.
Did you? Wow.
I didn't want to scare you, but I was worried about... I don't know. You know they do submarine testing in Pandora? It's that deep. There used to be military bases scattered all over it. At least, that's what I heard. I worried about government technology or weaponry or something. As stupid as that sounds.
It doesn't sound stupid. You guys are faced with the unknown.
Yeah, I was on pins and needles all night.
Well, I forgot about it, and Dan seemed fine too, so we drank some wine and had a nice evening, and around 11 we came out here onto the balcony for his bedtime cigar.
It was dark, but on nights where the moon is really bright, you have a perfect view of the water between the trees, there and there.
Sure enough, the view from the balcony is picturesque. From here you can see the family's private beach, rickety wooden dock, framed by leafy green maple, which open up like theater curtains on either side. The sparkling lake beyond them looks almost too perfect to be real, tinged red and orange by the sunset. It's easy to see how a black smudge on the water's surface would not only be noticeable, it would disrupt the scene in a disturbing way.
We noticed right away that the weird shape was gone.
You'd think that would make us feel better. It was probably nothing all along. But for some reason, not being able to see it was even worse. Like, it reminded me of the time I was followed by a guy in Boise. Remember that, Danny? I was walking alone at night like an idiot, and I wasn't sure he was even following me. He could just be heading my way. But I looked back at one point, and I saw him duck into an alley trying to hide. And that's when I knew. So I ran.
Jesus.
The shape being gone felt like that. Like it wasn't really gone. It was just hiding.
I felt the same. We sort of just looked at each other, then got really quiet and watched the water. Felt like we were waiting for something. I was expecting, I don't know, a submarine or a bunch of military guys in black swimming over our property, but no, nothing. So we went to bed.
The couple grows quiet long enough that I begin to grow concerned. That's all there is to the story. They got spooked by a floating log, the end. About to ask when Dan finally speaks up again. His voice is hushed, grave.
I woke up around 2 in the morning to a voice. It was outside. It was calling my name. Daniel. Daniel. Over and over. It was a young boy, a child. At first I was like, is that Joe or Izzy? Maybe they came back to try and scare us or something. But the more I listened, it didn't sound like either of them. They're adults, you know? So what the fuck? Well, maybe a neighbor's kid had gotten lost or something, or some teenagers were trying to prank us. We had our balcony door open, just had the screen to let in the breeze. That's why I could hear it so clearly. I got out of bed to go check it out. I had my gun with me, just in case. I took that. Went out to the balcony and sort of crouched down and peeked over the railing. I was hoping the kid wouldn't see me, but he did. He saw me immediately. He got really excited, you know, Daniel, Daniel! So I stand up straight and kind of puff up to look intimidating, you know? I was angry, but I was also really scared. We've never had issues with kids on our property, or drunk people, or anything. That weird shape in the water kept coming back to me. I couldn't shake the feeling this was connected. So I looked over and... and I expected to see the kid down there, but...
Dan points over the balcony railing to the ground not 20 feet below us, right in front of the house.
It was a full-grown man.
Fuck.
Yeah, he was a really tall guy, like 7 feet tall, I'm not shitting you. Lanky, real long arms, well-built though. I got nervous because he looked so strong. He could probably even take you in a fight, Blake. I had no chance against him if he decided to get violent and broke into the house. That voice should not come from that body. And he was clearly insane. You know how sometimes you can just tell when people aren't right? This guy made it easy. The childlike voice was enough to clue you in, but he was naked too. Buck-ass fucking naked. That pissed me off. He had really long dark hair down to his back. I'd say he was a hobo or something, but he looked really clean. That was the odd thing. His hair was straight and shiny. He looked clean, you know? He wasn't disgusting or anything besides being naked. His eyes were weird, though. Really blank, cloudy. Reminded me of fish eyes. Anyway, I didn't want him anywhere near the house.
I craned to look over the balcony, silently agreeing. The distance to the ground does not feel far at all, despite being one floor up. It would be extremely intrusive for a stranger to be there, especially one so tall. It would feel unsafe.
So I yelled at him, "Get out of here, this is private property, you know?" But he just stood there, smiling at me. His eyes, they looked like they were going to bulge out of his head. Blake, I swear to fucking God, those big, bulgy fish eyes. He called again, "Daniel," in that voice, and he beckoned to me, like...
Dan crooks his finger at me, smiling, his eyes wide and manic.
I froze. I couldn't move. I just kept staring at his weird gray eyes.
Dan shakes his head and purses his lips, then paces forward to lean against the balcony, looking out to the lake beyond.
I don't remember much after that.
I do. It was awful. Danny woke me up when he got out of bed. And of course I heard that creepy child's voice calling for him. When I got out to the balcony, Danny was back by the screen door. I've never seen him like that. He was completely out of it, just staring straight ahead. And I followed his gaze, and I saw the top of that man's head. His weird, gray fish eyes peeking over the balcony railing.
Wait, he had climbed up the side of the house or something?
No. He was still standing on the ground. Blake, he was so tall. Way taller than 7 feet.
But Dan, you had to lean over the railing to see him.
Yeah, he was down there, at least at first, I think.
Huh. Is it possible the guy, like, got taller?
Maybe. I don't know what Dan saw, but when I saw him, he was tall enough that he could see over a second-story balcony. Oh my God, he was grotesque. Looked sort of stretched out. His head was this oblong shape, and with all that long black hair. Anyway, I screamed, and I grabbed Danny to pull him away. The guy or thing or... whatever. I got really afraid he'd try to, like, I don't know, reach up the railing and grab us. But he didn't. In fact, he started backing away from us really slow, his huge body kind of cringing away. And he said, "Oh, hello," to me like a child caught with his hand in the cookie jar. Kept backing up towards the lake. His body language was very... almost shy. But he never took his eyes off us. He had predatory eyes. He kept saying, "Oh, hi there," or a variation of it, over and over in that young child's voice. Really uncanny. Over-friendly. And he apologized, too. "Oh, sorry, and I didn't see you there." Kept repeating himself like a broken record. "Oh, hello, didn't see you there. Oh, hi there, so sorry. Oh, I didn't see you there. Oh, hi." The whole time he was... retreating from us. Really, really upsetting. He got to the end of the dock, still talking, saying nonsense, apologizing. "Oh, hello, oh, sorry, hi there." I thought he was heading back to a boat or something, but when he got to the end of the dock, he just went completely silent. Actually, I think the last thing he said was, "Oh, I didn't see you there." And then he suddenly just slipped into the water. Like a snake back into its hole. Hardly made a ripple. He didn't surface again. I don't know where he went. That was the last time we saw him. I got Danny back to bed, and he slept the whole night like nothing had happened.
It's been almost a year, but every time I look out at that damn lake from here, I think I'll see him surface. You know, pop his head above the water to watch.
There's something wistful in Dan's voice. Kendall hears it too, and I can tell it bothers her. What do you think it wanted with you?
It wanted a meal.
Nah, Ken, he didn't want anything like that. Hopefully, he didn't want anything at all.
Hopefully, we'll never find out.
Kendall and Dan graciously offered me their lot to park my RV and stay a few nights, which I took them up on. I've been going pretty steadily with cases at this point, driving all over the country, and a little vacation from that sounded excellent. But after the couple told me their story, we spent a few hours shooting the shit before they wanted to bunker down. I went back to my RV and I tried to settle down too. With their weird little tail knocking around in my skull, I was restless. Grabbed my cigs, rolled a joint, headed out to their rickety old dock. The scene of the crime and all that. Obviously, after nearly a year, I wasn't expecting to find any evidence of the creepy fish-eyed giant, but the lake was pretty in the moonlight. I stayed out there for a few hours smoking and contemplating the black water, still and mirror smooth. I tested my bravery by dipping a foot in, fully expecting it to be grabbed by a white, long-fingered hand. I waited a moment, almost hoping it would be. Months of stories, I wanted something concrete, something dangerous. But nothing happened. I withdrew my foot. The night grew deeper. As I sat in silence, staring up at the stars, my thoughts drifted to Claire. My best friend, the best girl I've ever known. It had been years since she died, but the melancholy and regret were still as sharp as ever. She would have loved this.
Lake.
The whisper ripped me out of my contemplations, coming from somewhere behind me. I jerked around, scanning the yard, and saw nothing but the dark house. No Kendall or Dan, no one. I rose to my feet. Whoever had called my name had to be somewhere. The voice had been loud, clear as day. More of a yell whisper. I guess they could be hiding in the thick foliage surrounding the yard. But everything was still and dark. I didn't have a flashlight to go searching, anyway. My eyes landed on my RV, where a light burned through the windows, the only source of illumination for miles. Wait, the light? I was sure I turned them all off before coming out here. I squinted towards it, and suddenly a face appeared in the RV's kitchen window. Well, a silhouette of a face. A face wearing a wide-brim hat. It pressed itself against the glass from the inside, fully shadowed by the light behind it. First, in the distance and darkness, I didn't think that it had any features, but as I squinted, I thought I could make something out. Something like two round white eyes and a toothy mouth. It was hard to be sure. It was still for a long moment. Then it slowly, vaguely raised one of its shadowy hands to point a finger at me. No, not at me, behind me. Somehow finding it in me to take my eyes off of whatever was in my RV, I slowly turned around. Out in the middle of the lake, lit only by blue moonlight, a small black shape floated eerily in the glassy surface. My mouth dropped open. I squinted at it through the darkness. It did look like someone's head. Someone with long black hair that covered most of his face. The way it sat there, I got the impression that it was attached to a body underneath, but it was too far away to really tell. After a couple minutes, the shape slowly sank back underwater, as if it noticed it had been spotted and it was retreating for the night, going back under the water to wait. Patient. I stood there on that dock for a long while. It never resurfaced. That was enough of that. I turned to head back to my RV, the shadow person inside being far preferable to whatever was lurking in the lake. But all the lights were off once again, and when I got back, it was empty and silent. I tried to sleep after that, but I ended up just laying in bed thinking. A little nervous. So close to the anniversary of the fish-eyed giant's first visit. Seeing that shape in the lake tonight. I imagine the worst. Maybe he'd call my name from outside. Maybe I'd wake up to a giant standing over me, drooling, licking his chops. Possibilities kept me awake until the wee hours. Then I said I wanted an adventure. Pussy. I finally drifted off around 3 a.m. Sleep was restless. I woke with a start, probably less than an hour later, and I stared at the ceiling, wondering what had pulled me out of sleep so abruptly. I was overcome with the eerie sense that there was eyes on me. Some unseen intruder. Dread started in my chest, and the kind I usually associate with nightmares or half-dream states. Eventually, I was fully awake. There was the sound of a soft creak, and in my periphery, I thought I saw the curtains in the bedroom doorway shift abruptly. As if someone was trying to open them or running their fingers along them from the other side. But in the dim pre-dawn light, I couldn't be sure. I told myself that I was just jumpy, just imagining the movement. But those damn curtains kept shifting, inch by inch. I turned my head to look. There was indeed a gap in the curtains. The opening widened near ground level, like something was parting them at the foot of my bed. I moved my eyes down to see what it was. A man's head was peeking between them, down near floor level, like he was crawling around. He froze when I spotted him, neither retreating nor advancing. Felt his eyes on me, though. Even though he didn't have any, he was featureless. In fact, solid black, like the impression of a face. Pits for eyes, a bump for a nose, high cheekbones, the impression of a mouth. Three-dimensional silhouette. No hat this time, though. That mean there was more than one. Even if that was the case, I didn't think shadow people could move physical objects like curtains or cups. I didn't think they could speak, call my name, and I didn't think they latched onto people and followed them around the country. I yelled as soon as I saw him. After a moment, he retreated, and the curtains fell back into place. Of course, when I searched the RV, no one was there. Again. So that was the third time my shadow friend showed up. The first was after the hole. Then after Lydia's story, now this. Not only that, this time it actually drew my attention to what was happening out in the lake. Did that mean anything? I had no idea. Some kind of pattern was forming, and I wasn't sure I liked it. Whatever it was, you can bet your ass, I'm gonna keep an eye on it.